Nationwide Insurance brings you the NASCAR Nationwide Series. Check us out. 1-866-500-5555 to get your insurance on track. Nationwide's on your side. Call
866-500-5555. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. We have Joel McHale waiting on the Subway Fresh Take hotline. But I do want to mention that after we finish the interview with him, I'm going to go through a couple things, some house cleaning, if you will, that include my incredible Vampire Weekend mistake that I really want to delve into. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, the host of The Soup. And now a movie star and a TV star is Mr. Multimedia, Mr. Joel McHale. What's happening?
Thank you for saying those things. None of them are true, but thank you.
Well, they're technically true. You host a very popular TV show.
Yes. On cable, basic cable. On E!
Cable.
If we got the ratings of a network, we'd be canceled in 2 minutes.
In my opinion, any show that has a website with a daily blog is a popular show, and I don't care what the numbers say.
I don't even think about that as a measure, but yes, I agree.
Yeah.
It's a great job because I just get to make fun of television, and I mean it's crazy. I mean, I feel like I could have sat, I used to sit around my underwear doing the same thing.
Right.
And now I get paid for it, and I feel like I'm getting away with something.
Well, we met at a Super Bowl party, and
yeah,
I told you, I'd actually go out of my way not to compliment people I meet who are in the celebrity world.
Wait, you go out of your way not to say nice things?
Yeah, I try to play that. I play hard to get with the celebs because the celebs, they get their ass kissed so much that, when you meet them, they kind of expect you to say like, hey, man, I loved you and whatever. So I intentionally don't do that.
Right.
But in your case, I really respect that show because I just think the degree of difficulty is much, much higher than people realize to host a show like that and try to be glib but not be overbearing and be likable but not smarmy. And there's just a lot of secret landmines in that show that I don't think people fully understand. Would you agree?
That is deeply nice of you to say.
Thank you.
So if you met George Clooney, you wouldn't go like, hey, man, nice job on Batman and Robin.
No, I'd probably compliment him on Facts of Life, actually. Try to bring him down immediately.
Nice.
Hey,
nice.
Man, nice work in season 7 of Facts of Life. I thought you were great.
Yeah.
You got a
raw
deal, man.
Yeah, love to deal with that one fine day thing. Oy vey. No, thank you. It's one of those things where we as a group, we have 14 people watching television now, and now we feel like we are gluttons, and we have this just wonderful banquet in some Midwest town, and all the 400-pounders are showing up to eat at it, and we're really blessed with all the crap on television.
Well, the show initially failed when it was called Talk Soup. It kind of it didn't fail initially, but it died after a while. I think it stopped.
It died after, 11 years.
Yeah, 2002. But the big issue is that it wasn't totally a daily show. There wasn't quite enough material. But now that you've gone to a weekly show and changed the name, it's almost like it's not like, I feel like you could do two a week.
Yes, in Talk Soup was really about talk shows, and that thing that was born out of, remember in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a talk show boom?
Yep.
Where there was something like 15 or 16 talk shows on, and there wasn't that many channels, so that was a reaction to that. And by 2002, almost all those talk shows were gone, except for Springer, and how many, you can't just show only clips from Springer, and now we cut it down to what now is 22 minutes without commercials, and we kind of wanted to, we could do two shows a week. There was talk of making it daily, but I felt that would dilute the product, and we try to make it like a chocolate truffle.
You're a man of honor, Joel McHale.
Well, God bless you for saying that. I don't agree. I mean, I work at E, but.
Yeah, no, no. You know, it's funny that it stopped in 2002, but actually that was probably the worst time for it to stop because that's right when the reality boom had started and you had shows like Joe Millionaire and.
Yeah.
The Apprentice and all these stupid shows that were coming up.
Big Brother was starting up and.
Yeah.
And Survivor was still enormous and.
But the cable networks hadn't really started doing their own versions of it yet, which in a lot of ways were even better and had more material for you, like Flavor of Love, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, the evolution of Flava Flav's career after The Surreal Life, where he met Brigitte Nielsen, is astonishing.
Right.
And I imagine that, Chuck D from Public Enemy just thinks, okay, at one point, we were in Public Enemy, had one of the most politically charged rap bands with great respect, and Flava Flav now, his partner is now famous for banging skanks on VH1.
You're saying that eats away at Chuck D?
My guess is it must be weird for him. It would be like being an Olympic athlete, and then your younger brother becomes famous for playing rollerball.
Mm.
Not that rollerball is not an awesome sport, but now I'm going to have rollerball people upset with me.
Well, I just looked it up as you were talking.
Rollerball?
No, don't think I can't multitask.
Good for you.
The Surreal Life started in 2003.
Oh, so a year?
A year after, yeah. So it was only a matter of time.
Yeah, and, you know, we expanded it to everything. We put in celebrity news. And jokes about anything, you know, that if Lindsay Lohan's going to run her assistant down in a parking lot with an SUV, then we're going to cover that. The old version did not. It was just kind of a roundup of television, of talk shows. And so we just opened it up to everything. That's why we dropped the talk part of the title.
It was a little like when Puff Daddy became P. Diddy. A new era.
Yes, a new era, a new dawn.
Yeah.
That's why I've launched my clothing line.
It's called
Sean Joel. It's awesome.
Sean Joel, I like that.
Yeah.
So E starts making reality shows. Obviously, you have to make fun of them.
Oh yeah.
You've gone after the Kardashians.
Yes.
Relentlessly.
Yes.
And do the E executives does that make them uncomfortable?
This is E's greatest, one of their greatest attributes is that they have been totally open for me to make fun. They've basically allowed us to say the same things that we say about other television shows. I don't think it would be weird. There would be a big elephant in the room if we couldn't make fun of our own network that has shows like The Girls Next Door, Kardashians, Ollie, Twins, and Denise Richards, It's Complicated. They have been really liberal. The only time we ran into, you can't say, there's a couple times we pissed half off. And they've been really good about us just kind of going, they're like, hey, can you lay off of Grandpa for a bit? And, can you take a week off from Grandpa? And we're like, all right. But when Dina Lohan, I mean, in great irony, when Dina Lohan had a show, she basically said we could not make fun of her. And we still did without showing clips, and her show was canceled because it was boring as could be. She's not that interesting, I
nominate that as the worst reality show ever made.
I'm going to go with Tara Reid's Wild On.
Now, see, I kind of like the Tara Reid one.
I could not believe. I mean, Wild On is just going around the world and going to parties and going, this is where people party.
But that's what was funny about. But it was funny though because they were paying for her.
What?
Well, they were basically enabling all of the bad habits that that her publicists and agents wanted her to get away from. That's what I liked about it.
I mean, how can you mess that up? The show did very well with Brooke Burke and Jules Asner and those folks when they were doing it in the mid-90s. But somehow Tara Reid could not keep the franchise going.
I don't think she's a franchise player.
The worst show that drove me out of my mind, is Big Brother. That just drives me out of my mind because it's just people whispering to each other and conspiring, lying on beds, quietly whispering, and then doing ridiculous challenges. The other one was when Britney Spears had her own show. I forget what it was called, but she and her, what's her name, Fetterline, they shot it with video cameras.
Yeah, that was
so
creepy.
Not only was the content awful, but then you felt sick because they were, you know, they were like any other person who is using a handheld video camera. You began to get ill from the camera whipping around.
I agree. All of those shows are terrible, and I never understood the Big Brother thing. I mean, ever. But the Dean Lohan,
I feel like if I were to go to hell, that that would be it. Just like, welcome to the Big Brother house. You're going to be here for the rest of eternity. Start whispering, conspiring.
and wondering about other people's sexuality.
Yeah.
The Dina Lohan thing, though, her credentials were basically that she gave birth to somebody who became a celebrity that we're not even sure we like. And that's really it. That was her credential, that she's a bad mom. So now we're supposed to spend a half hour a week with somebody who we already don't respect as a parent.
Yeah.
Never made sense to me.
Yeah, well, then again, I mean, look at the Kardashians. I mean, Kim is famous for having a big ass and a sex tape.
Right, as you
and,
often
but,
say.
But, yeah, Dina Lohan, that's what she's we liked Lindsay Lohan, I don't know, a few years ago after Mean Girls and a few other things she did where people like, this girl's really talented and really cute and really good, and then the wheel started coming off.
Let's talk some more about working for a network that has a sense of humor about itself. Cause I really want to know what that's like. So.
It's great.
So if there's people on your network that aren't related to you who have become kind of self-parodies in a way, you are allowed to make fun of those people in a good-natured way.
Yep. Ted
that's
Harbert.
That's awesome.
Ted Harbert, the president of E, is the reason why. And he is not, he has a good sense of humor and he is not, he realizes that if we make fun of it, that it actually helps the show.
Oh, that's just music to my ears. And Joe Mead, I need to hose myself down.
There you go. Why? Do you have a situation at your does ESPN not have a...
We don't have a similar sense of humor about ourselves, really. Yeah,
well, I mean, ESPN has great commercials for itself.
Right.
And I think what ESPN did... Well, they kind of invented the joking along with recapping the sports thing. But, yeah, you cannot – I don't think – unless you're in the Army and you're commanding troops, you should always try to approach things not too seriously.
Right.
I mean, not take it as a joke, but go in with a light – like this is not as big of a deal as people make it out to be.
So how long have you been hosting The Soup?
4 years.
So it's,
I can't believe it. And just to, well, gosh, I think it's 4.5. But, you know, when we first started, no one was watching. Once again, to E's credit, when no one was watching, they still believed in it. Which was actually worked out for me because it allowed me to screw up for like a year before anyone started noticing the show.
We talked about that a little bit. And, the same thing ironically happened to Kimmel where, you know, people, either they don't see the show initially or they give up on it right away, but in a weird way that's good because it enables you to get all these reps that you need. And then by the time the show is ready to be consumed by a larger audience, you're ready for it.
Yeah, and if you look at what Kimmel did last year, he's easily one of the best in the business. And with, you know, I'm effing Matt Damon and I'm effing Ben Affleck, that was the funniest thing that happened on any variety late night show on television that year.
Yeah,
we saw that, and as the Soup, as like the, we sat in the writers' room and go, well, that is the funniest thing, that there's nothing we can do to top that. Not that we're, there's just nothing you can do. It was just, that is the funniest thing that happened.
Well, it's gonna be interesting with Jimmy Fallon because he's the first high profile guy who's gotten a show in the last 6 years, basically since Jimmy got his show. And with
when Jimmy hit the ground running the way he did with the audience, when the audience was allowed to drink, which I think any audience should be allowed to do.
Right.
And when he deep fried that guy's watch a few nights later, I was just like, this is going to be one of the best ones.
Yeah. You know, I was working on this show the first year and I still have such a fondness for the first 5 or 6 months because we were ignoring all the focus groups.
Good.
And, you know, they're giving us research like, you know, you really can't do this. And we just weren't listening. And then it got to the point where either you started listening to focus groups or you weren't on the air anymore. So you have to make a fundamental creative decision.
Yeah, that's
can we have
focus.
Can we have both worlds?
Yeah. Yeah, and people don't. You hear about focus groups, and then you start looking at the people that show up to focus groups, and then you realize that executives are allowing huge decisions to be made by some dude who just got fired from the shrimp shack, and you can't do that. And I think it was that we got focus grouped after we were already on the air.
Right.
It's one of those things where it's a lose-lose situation. Unless it's positive, then it's a lose-lose situation. So
I have never understood focus groups, and anytime they give me feedback from a focus group, I not only ignore it, but I will do the opposite if I can. Because have you ever met anybody who's been in a focus group? It's got to be just unemployed people.
I actually have known a lot of people in focus groups because being in LA, you have a lot of actor friends that are looking for $20.
So that's who does it. These bitter people.
I had a friend who was in focus groups and he tested prescription drugs.
Nice. Did he give sperm and blood?
I don't think he gave sperm, but he definitely gave blood multiple times.
He didn't father Nadia Suleiman's 14 kids, did he?
Oh, that's a good question.
You should check that out.
I think he has dibs on three. But though I think like the way, ignoring the focus groups so these people who go to a focus group don't really know, and they're just watching this thing, whereas you have Jimmy, who is the comic, that's where it's coming out of, and then NBC obviously hired him and believed in him, and people were watching, what's the point of it? He knows what he's doing. You know what I mean?
I think about
all the hosts. You know, he is so relaxed up there, and he makes everyone like feel like, oh yeah, I can hang with this guy.
Yeah,
and that's why it works. I think it's like to make a late night talk show work is really difficult because you not only have to be funny and you have to be a showman, but you also have to be incredibly personable. And sometimes even with those three things. Or I don't even know what the other factors are. It still doesn't work. But Jimmy's one of those guys that's going to be like, you know, he'll be like Carson. He'll be around until as long as he wants to.
Right. I do worry about the future late night, though, because it's so much different from when we were growing up.
How much time do you spend worrying, Bill?
Well, I worry about it a little bit. I worry about my friend who hosts a late night show. I worry that there's so many niche shows now. You know, you look at all the cable networks, and now on the internet, now it's just people can push any envelope, and it seems like comedy is now hitting people with specific things. Like your show, for instance, you're filling a specific niche, whereas
right.
27 years ago, Letterman could grab all these different niches and put them together.
That's true. That there's a lot. There's just so much more to choose from. But the proof will always be. It's just like anything where. You know, like in the mid-90s, the talk soup was invented because there was a reaction to so many talk shows.
Right.
And only the best talk shows survived, and ultimately that was Oprah. And
who dominates all.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of talk shows that are still on. You've got your Montel, and I guess Donahue survived for a while, and Sally Jesse Raphael survived for a while. But I think it's just like anything. The funniest, most entertaining people are going to... survive.
You've grasped the power of the Steve Wilkos show, right?
We have never shown a clip from that.
No?
I don't know why we haven't. I think it's been brought in a few times.
Oh.
That guy's intense.
Oh, I was in Vegas once with one of my buddies, and we watched two straight Steve Wilkos shows, and we were just... couldn't have been more hooked.
There you go.
It's a show that is really like on the verge of real physical, horrible violence.
Yes.
For an hour. And I have no idea why anyone would watch it.
Well, I think Dr. Phil is just a few steps away from Steve Wilkos.
So who would be your MVP of Talk Soup, of The Soup for the first 4 years?
The MVP?
Yeah. Who would be your MVP, your go-to clip provider?
Oh, I thought you were talking about on the staff. No. Let's see. I was going to say Mankini. Let's see, who is the MVP? It depends on the time of year.
No, you got to do the 4 years. It's got to be.
Oh, boy. I'm going to say, geez, that's a tough one.
Who's brought you the most
The
comedy.
Most, well, it depends. Like, as far as celebrity is concerned, probably Britney Spears or Lindsay Lohan.
Interesting.
But as far as, we were saved, I believe, in the beginning of, not saved, but it was just a great thing for us, was Whitney Houston show.
Oh,
and,
I forgot about that.
Whitney Houston show, which was being Bobby Brown, which really was about, I mean, I guess it was about Bobby, but it was more just an incredible thing that Whitney Houston was on camera on a reality show every week, you know, clearly high as a kite.
Yeah.
And following their lives. And she would scream, when she screamed Kiss My Ass at the top of her incredible instrument that is her voice while she was having an argument about George Bush with Bobby Brown, it was amazing. And when, you know, like the second episode, and we used that clip for 2 years, and the second episode, Bobby Brown talks about digging Doogie bubbles out of Whitney's butt. And when you're, I mean, that is, this is Whitney Houston, who was at one point one of the biggest stars in the world. Movie star, I mean, greatest, but there was no bigger singer than her. She was Beyonce and Celine Dion wrapped into one.
Right.
And when you listen to Bobby Brown talking about digging poop out of her butt, that's really good for the soup.
Sometimes the bodyguard is on. It'll sometimes make its way through the cable channel rotation, and you watch Whitney in that movie, and that's when it really hits home. Like, wow.
That she was hot and she was good.
Yeah, I mean, total package. You think Beyonce is a total package now. I would argue Whitney maybe a level above.
Whitney Houston, well, time will tell with Beyonce. I mean, obviously she's doing anything she wants,
her ceiling was higher.
Whitney could do anything she wants.
Yeah.
And then a little thing called Mr. Herb came into her life.
Yeah, unfortunately. You've gotten some mileage out of the two cores.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was, we had Feldman came on, which was great, but, it was a little too staged. We hate it when, there's a lot of things that come out that are really staged and it's really annoying.
So you've developed a detector.
The what?
You've developed a detector for what's
genuine
and what's
staged. Our own show on E, and we make fun of the fact that they do this all the time is Denise Richards colon, it's complicated. They are always, you know, everything is always staged and manipulated. It's like, you know, if you and I, it's like they set it up, they're like, Bill, what do you want to do today? I don't know, what do you want to do? You know what? I'd like to go to a pig farm. What? Yeah, I want to look for a potbelly pig. All right. And then that was obviously thought up in a writing room somewhere.
Well, the greatest stage reality show going right now is a show that nobody's watching called Deeper Throat.
What?
Have you heard of this?
No.
It's on Showtime. It started about 3 weeks ago, and it stars the head of Vivid Video, who I think his name is Steve Hirsch. And his goal is to buy the rights of Deep Throat, the first porn movie ever. He's trying to buy the rights to Deep Throat from Ray Pistol of Arrow Productions. And Ray Pistol is like nobody you've ever seen, like the biggest degenerate ever. And basically every scene in this show is staged, but I love it anyway. And I'm so ashamed of myself, but it's fantastic.
Well,
I would add that to the rotation.
Sounds like a show we probably couldn't show clips from.
No, you could, because it's not very porny. It is porny, but it's not, because a lot of it's like, all right, I'm flying to Vegas to negotiate with Ray Pistol. Like, there's stuff in there. I think you could get material.
All right, well, we'll look at it. Like, the people wanted us to use clips from The Cat House.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
I was like, have you seen The Cat? Yeah, so we can't show that.
That's not going to work. Wait, quickly, because we got to talk about the Sonics, but I quickly want to talk about your acting now.
Yes.
You're in a movie with Matt Damon?
Yes.
You're filming it?
No, it's already been filmed. We filmed it last year.
Oh, you finished it?
Oh, it's been finished for a long time.
Oh, man. You know, I made the mistake of going to your Wikipedia page to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff on there that's wrong.
Yeah, I don't know why, because mine has like 14 inaccuracies, but it said you were
people,
still filming it.
I do this, like, this happens on radio, and this happens actually a lot on people like, so, Joel, you were starting tight end on the national championship. No, I wasn't. No.
I figured that wasn't true.
No, I was on that not the national championship team, and I wasn't the starter. And, yeah, they got my ass kicked a lot.
But you did walk on to the University of Washington football team, correct?
Yes, I did. Wow, I segued right into that perfectly.
That's nice. That's impressive.
I did, yes, but it was not the year that we won. A, B, I was backup. And the other thing it says on my Wikipedia page is that I was in the Theta Chi fraternity. Yes, I was for three horrible months of my life, and I couldn't stand it.
I have not looked at my page in like 2 years because there were so many inaccuracies the last time I went that I was like, I can't even, this bothers me. I can't look at this ever again.
No.
So you finished this movie. When is it coming out?
September 18th or something, September 15th.
And you got a TV pilot.
Yes, I did.
For NBC.
It's called Community, and it's going to be, it's for NBC. Hopefully it will be picked up for NBC.
So you're going to film a pilot. Hope they pick it up, and if they do pick it up, you become the star of your own TV show.
Well, yes, that would be the
ideal
theory,
situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's being struck by lightning four times.
Yep.
It's very difficult to get a show picked up.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that because people hear like, "Hey, you got a pilot? That's awesome!" But they don't realize it's like stage one of a 5-level video game.
Yeah, and I would say it's a 30-level video game, and you don't get a paddle. You have to watch. Because once you shoot it, then it's out of your hands. And you just know. It's, you know, remember that game Pachinko?
Yeah.
It's like that, where the ball just starts falling down, and you have no idea how it's, you know, what it's going to end up in. But it's one of those things where if you're like Seinfeld and those guys, they are in such a small elite group of people that develop shows. They got on the air. They stayed on the air, and they were hit. To have a hit show is like hitting five half court shots.
Well, and even Seinfeld was only on for four episodes the first season, and then they debated for like five months whether to bring it back or not. And
there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
And it became one of the biggest shows of all time.
Well, I'm glad your future TV career is in the hands of focus groups because that's. You know, it's right where you want to be.
I'm sure
you'll film your pilot, and they'll bring some out-of-work guys in to give opinions on it.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. There's going to be some guys who've been sniffing roofing material all day long.
All right, let's talk about the Sonics. So you grew up in Seattle.
What Sonics?
You went to the University of Washington. You rooted for the Sonics.
Yeah.
You were what? I think you're late 30s, right? So you were there for
Gus Williams. Yeah, so I showed up the year. We briefly moved to New Jersey for 2 years, and then we moved back. I was a huge Sonics fan all through my life, and they had the mascot, which was the Weedle, and Gus Williams and Fred Brown and. All those guys, Jack Sikma. I loved the Sonics.
And, you like Jack Sikma's
perm? And then I watched
them,
obviously, when they had Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. Gary Payton, you know, is a legend in Seattle, but it was, you know, all through, even through the dark times with, you know, the X-Man and Bernie Bickerstaff as coach, it was when we weren't very good. But it is just a stunning, stunning thing that we sold a team that has won a championship.
And at what point did you come to grips with the fact that, my God, these guys, they're actually might leave here?
It was astounding when they sold the team to, and I don't blame, like, people are mad at Oklahoma City for buying them. I wouldn't, if I were Oklahoma City and I wanted a team, I would be out looking for any team. And if you sell a team to a city that has an empty stadium waiting there.
Right.
And then you are told by the people, we are not going to take the team to Oklahoma City. I mean, who are you kidding?
Yep.
I mean, that should be your... I mean, it's so strange to me. I mean, it's not strange to me. The people that sold the Sonics had knew exactly what they were doing.
So you blame Howard Schultz, the Starbucks czar.
Yeah, my guess is that he did not know how. He bought, you know, he could have bought and sold the Sonics and built 12 arenas any day of the week he wanted. The guy's got enough money to do it, but that's the other thing that didn't make any sense to me. He got into this game of owning a team, and I don't know how to run an NBA team at all. And but clearly he did not either. And now he is the villain of Seattle. It made no sense to me because he should have made drastic measures to keep the team in Seattle once it started getting out of hand. But now he walks down the street and people are mad at him. It's just crazy to me that you would get into a team, sell it to a city that clearly wanted an NBA team, and then, you know, then he turns around and obviously what he tried to do was sue them. I mean, it was ridiculous. So I also blame the commissioner of basketball. He did nothing to stop it.
No, he didn't. And his role in the whole thing has always been a little unclear, a little hazy, a little dubious.
And it just, yeah. I knew that people resented Oklahoma, but I did not. This is exactly what I would have done if I were Oklahoma City, and I really wanted a team. I was like, well, this one's for sale. I'm going to buy it.
Now,
it makes sense that they would. I mean, but why would Seattle even consider selling it?
I'm going to give you the option. I do not talk about the city that shall not be named out of respect to the people of Seattle.
Thank you.
And if I mistakenly mention the name of the team, my producer Joe Mead bleeps.
Okay, good.
So
wow.
If you want, we can bleep all the times you mention the city that shall not be named.
Wow.
Or you can leave it in. It's up to you. Your call.
I say leave it in. I'm going to be bold here.
Okay.
But I understand you said it's a trap. Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong here. When you buy an NBA team, you do not buy an NBA team to make money every year on that team. You're not going to be printing money unless you are a championship team, right?
Put it this way. Supposedly, I have this on pretty reliable authority, 20 of the 30 NBA teams will lose money this year.
Right.
So you buy it for an ego.
You buy it for an ego. And it is clearly you're not getting into it to make bunches of cash. If you're in this game, you've got to have a lot of money to spend.
Right.
You make your money on your NBA team when you sell it.
You know what the NBA team is? It's like buying a yacht. You've basically bought a yacht. You've bought something that already isn't as worth as much as you just paid for it. And you're doing it because you want to have your friends over and take the yacht out and go out to dinner and be like, hey, look at my yacht. Hey, I just painted it. Hey. But it's not a logical purchase.
No.
It's not something that makes sense, except for the fact that you just want to puff your chest out and tell people you own a team.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, you brought up Howard Schultz. Here's the thing I don't get. So he's made more money than he could ever spend, ever, you know, in a kajillion years. He probably has a nice family that likes him and a good relationship with them. I'm guessing, who knows? Really, at that point, he's from Seattle. He's considered one of the, you know, iconic figures of Seattle. At that point, the only other option you have is just to make sure that everyone around you continues to like you. So for him to sell the Sonics to these old people, Joe?
Yeah. Well,
bleep that for me.
Bleep that, Joe.
For him to sell the Sonics to a group that obviously was poised to move them, I don't understand financially how it was worth it for him to basically give up the next 20 years and turn into a villain. Makes no sense to me.
That makes no sense to me either. I'm sure he's got a great excuse somehow, but admit he had the money. He himself had the money to save face.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you could have gone up to him in 2003 and said, okay, Howard, you are going to be the biggest villain in Seattle, or you have to build a new stadium with money that you have in copious amounts. You choose. It's your choice. And he's like, you know what? I want to be hated. I want to go out to dinner and have people sneer at me. Like, it's just crazy that he made that choice.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I do not get it either. And I guess it just comes down. I mean, my guess is that it would come down to greed, that he didn't want to spend his own money. Not greed, I guess. That he just didn't. It just was not the business decision that would make sense to him for him to spend $350 million of his own dollars.
Well, it's sad to me, and the fact that I just don't think any team that won a title should move. I think once you win a title, you have permanent immunity, and you cannot be moved from that city. And the other thing is, you know, you look at Seattle. Seattle's, I think, one of our quirkiest American cities. It's a really cool city that people, you know, the people that live there love it. They swear by it. It's got, you know, it's got the grunge era that going. It's got the coffee thing going, and it had the Sonics going. And you just remove one of those components, and it's not the same city. And that,
no,
that's what bugs me more than anything.
No, it's a serious, serious bummer.
And, now, would you feel good about
that?
When
I drive by the old stadium, it's just so depressing.
Well, would you feel good about taking someone else's team?
No. I mean, it depends on what the situation is. I mean, I don't know what the case would be.
Well, here's let me present the situation.
Well, here's the other thing is that people complain. One other thing, like the Mariners, when they were not doing well, they didn't sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Sonics weren't selling a lot of tickets. If your team is winning, like that's what some things, like sometimes the owners complain about, you know, tickets. If your team is winning, you sell tons of tickets. And when the Mariners were awesome, they sold out every game.
Yeah.
And so that's their job to make the team good. Anyway, that's what I said. Go ahead.
Here's a scenario. Here's a scenario that really could happen. So the New Orleans Hornets are in deep doo-doo in New Orleans because they were promised all this money from the city to kind of keep going and keep their operating costs at a reasonable level.
New Orleans doesn't want, you know, they don't even want the money from the stimulus package. So.
Right. Well, and New Orleans now, it looks like either they're going to have to choose between the Saints and the Hornets, and they're going to choose the Saints, or not have enough money for either. Either way, the Hornets are probably on their way out. You're looking at a scenario where this summer, the Hornets could just jump to Seattle, and all of a sudden you get Chris Paul, who's one of the five best players in the league. But on the flip side, you're taking this team from New Orleans, this city that's been devastated by this, you know, this tragedy 3 years ago that they, you know, it's going to take a century for them to recover from. I mean, that'd be kind of weird. I don't know if I'd want the Hornets.
Yeah.
Depressing.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, obviously, if they're bankrupt and can't afford it, that team's going to go somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it has to go somewhere, then why not Seattle? I like the symmetry of
It's not a situation like we had where there was no reason for them to sell the team.
Mm-mm.
Our city, you know, was not devastated by a hurricane and did have the money and the people to keep it going. So,
yeah.
But if it's a bankrupt situation and it's a fire sale for the team, then hey, let me know.
Well, I do think, you know, the more I've talked to people and studied this whole thing, trying to explain Stern and how he was so seemingly callous with this whole thing. You know, I think they want to keep that threat that as long as cities keep building state-of-the-art arenas, teams can go anywhere. So the pressure is on the city to say, we have to build this arena or we might lose our team. And
right.
Now you can just point to the Seattle city that shall not be named thing as this is what will happen if you don't build a stadium.
Yeah, it was not good for Stern when all those YouTube videos of him saying the arena is a very special place to play basketball.
Yeah, that was 1995. It wasn't like it was, you know, 1975.
Yeah.
It was 14 years ago. I don't know what to tell you. I just think the whole thing sucks. I continue to think it sucks. And now that Kevin Durant is basically playing out of his mind, it's, you know, doubly as bad as it was 4 months ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed his box scores.
I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's going to be one of the best ever.
Potentially.
If he keeps on this thing, he's going to be one of the best ever. And there was a time I saw a couple articles like Oklahoma City in threat of being one of the worst records of all time.
Yeah.
But then Kevin Durant stepped up and you know, that's not going to be the case anymore.
He's going to have
fire. You know, they love basketball there. All the games are sold out.
Yeah, you can't kill them on that because they've supported the team and they deserve to be commended for that. Maybe that's where sports is going. Maybe now these smaller cities where you have one franchise and you have an arena and you rally around it, that might be.
Yeah, I was in Columbus, Ohio, and obviously the only games in town are Ohio State football and their NHL hockey team.
The Blue Jackets.
They love them.
Yeah.
I mean, they love them. And it was kind of cool to see that.
And that's a city that might steal an NBA team soon. Because
really?
Because they have a new arena. Basically, any NBA team with a state-of-the-art arena, I mean, any city with a state-of-the-art arena for hockey, or like Kansas City built an arena, they don't even have a hockey or a basketball team.
And they're
like, hey, how about Kansas City? Come on
out.
Hey,
So what you're saying is, the NBA will just move around to different cities that each build a new state-of-the-art stadium.
I kind of feel like that's what they've established with the Seattle thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they, you know, because the revenue sharing agreement is so not beneficial to the owners, they have to make that money back with luxury suites and courtside tickets, all that stuff. And if you don't have an arena that generates that kind of revenue, you're screwed.
Right.
But it's really, when you really spin around, it's the NBA's fault because they should have a better collective bargaining agreement. Vladimir Radmanovich should not be making $7 million a year. Okay, so you've screwed up your system, and now you're making cities pay because you're overpaying
right.
your players.
Right.
So
right.
there you go. Hey,
yeah.
do you want to plug any of your comedy stuff?
Oh, geez, hold on. Yeah, let me look. I have to look it up on the internet.
Are you gonna be at Chuckles or Laffy's?
How dare you! I'm gonna be at Chuckle Laffy's Happy House.
I can.
Happy Time Hilarity House.
Do you want me to Google and look?
Hold on, I'm here right now. I'm on my own website, joemckale.com, everyone.
Nice. Did you have to buy that URL? Did you have it?
I bought it. I mean, I bought it years ago.
Oh, you bought it from the domain service?
Yes.
You didn't buy it from some freak in like San Diego who was hoarding it?
No, not like what happened to Corolla, where
yeah.
somebody kept trying to sell it back to him. He just like never was interested. And then the guy just let it expire.
Right.
I'm going to be in Minneapolis on Friday, and the first show sold out, but at 10 p.m. there's tickets available. That's this Friday, February 27th. And then on March 13th, I'll be in Long Beach at the Terrace Theater, and then March 14th at the Thousand Oaks Civic Center. There you go.
I've never been to that. How big is the Thousand Oaks Civic Center?
2,000 people.
Nice.
No, excuse me. Yeah, the Thousand Oaks. Yeah, that's 2,000 people. The Long Beach one is 2,800, I think.
So Thousand Oaks could not support an NBA team?
No. But do you think that Santa Barbara could? They could. They're so rich, they could just stick them in a gym somewhere.
I had this conversation with somebody at All-Star Weekend because I don't understand why San Diego doesn't have a team. It just seems
it
like there's so
crazy.
Much money there. And they,
well, hell, there's no NBA. I mean, there's no NFL team here.
Right. But there are other reasons for that
yeah,
that have nothing
reasons.
To do with. But with the San Diego thing, it really comes down to the fact that there are no businesses in San Diego, really. And they rely on, you know, like in Boston, they have all these financial district companies that will buy all the courtside seats and the luxury suites or whatever. And
yeah.
San Diego, it's just rich people. You can't really rely on rich people because they can't write off the seats or the tickets.
True.
So Santa Barbara's probably in the same boat, right?
Yeah, probably.
I'm guessing. I mean, I know that.
But what if they did a thing where, it would be totally crazy. They just do a stadium just of luxury boxes.
That would be interesting.
And they pre-sell the luxury boxes.
Yeah.
And, like, people buy them for 10 years, and so it doesn't matter.
You know, you laugh, but we might be headed that way in sports, where instead of actual seats between the baskets, it would just be all suites and luxury boxes, and then the fans will be behind the basket on either side.
Yeah, and so the players will just they'll have to do something about because there will always be glare off the glass
right.
that covers the luxury boxes.
Well, just look at what's happened to the NBA in the last 10 years. Like, they cram these courtside seats around. The Celtics now have, like, rows of courtside seats. And back, I was watching a tape of a game from, like, 1970, and, you know, behind the basket, there was 50 feet of no seats. Like, they just didn't even understand the concept back then.
Yeah.
Now it's like anybody that can shove near the basket for $500 are going to do it.
But, the ticket prices are astounding.
Yes.
When you can pay, like, people talk about, like, well, Madonna's tickets are $250 a piece. I'm like, you guys been to an NBA game lately? $1,000. And that's not even front row.
Wait until baseball season starts and baseball teams are expecting people to pay $80 to, you know, sit 40 rows up and on the third base side. I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably.
Anyway.
I mean, I wonder when the whole system will just collapse in on itself.
Please come back on the podcast every few months. I mean, you're not on Corolla show every week now. You need an outlet.
I know. Anytime. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right.
I'm not kidding. Let's do it. I'll call late. It'll be great.
Okay. Joe McHale, we will look for you on The Soup. We will look
Bill,
for you.
Thank you very much.
We will look for you on this Matt Damon movie. We will look for you on your NBC pilot that needs to get through 35 hoops to potentially get on the air, but hope we'll cross our fingers.
Let's hope it happens.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, before we go, I wanted to hit a couple of things. The big thing, I wrote about Baron Davis for ESPN the magazine for this issue, and a lot of people emailed about a very strange reference I had in there where I said that going to Clipper games was so depressing that they should be playing Morrissey or Vampire Weekend on the soundtrack. I mean, on the Jumbotron during timeouts and stuff. And I agree. It was a terrible job by me, so I'm going to explain what happened. I basically had, the trading deadline was on a Thursday, which was also my ESPN Magazine deadline. So that was a 2,000-word piece. I had to write it in 6 hours. So the first draft of the piece that I liked ended up being about 2,200 words. I had to cut out 200 words, and I had to do it, like, in 2 hours. So I'm frantically chopping up, taking out words here, condensing sentences, doing everything I can to get to 2,000. And originally that sentence read, it's something like, it's so depressing, they should be playing Morrissey or Vampire Weekends, the kids don't stand a chance, which I thought was like the perfect kind of song to represent the Clippers because they were playing a lot of young kids and they didn't stand a chance. So like an idiot, I'm condensing words and I take the song out and I decide I'm going to take Vampire Weekend out and put a more depressing band in there. Because if you've ever heard Vampire Weekend, a very upbeat, preppy kind of band. Like, I actually listen to them when I type. It's the bands over the last couple of years that I've really grown to like. I never went back and made the change because I wanted to Google and make sure I picked the right modern depressing band. I just forgot and I handed the column in. I'm such an idiot. It's really one of the biggest slip ups that I've had. I actually almost thought about having them take it out of the column when it posted online, but since it's in the magazine as Vampire Weekend, I couldn't do that. So I am just so depressed about this. It's one of the biggest F-ups that I've had, and it's just a bad job by me. I'd like to invite Vampire Weekend on for a podcast to make it up for them because they do not deserve to be lumped into the Morrissey realm of depressing music. They're actually the opposite. Bad job by me. Second, I really like the Mikey Moore pickup for the Celtics. I watched him on the Clippers for a year, and he's kind of exactly what they need, an energy big guy. I just liked it. It was a little sneaky under-the-radar move that I think is going to work. We had Jimmy Kimmel on yesterday, and he plugged his YouTube channel. I forgot to give the URL. It is youtube.com/ Jimmy Kimmel Live. So you can catch all the clips on that. We had Adam Carolla on last week on Friday. And he did not have the URL yet for his podcast that he started this week. It's CorollaRadio.com. And then finally, Joe Mead. We located all the BS reports.
We found them all.
Thanks to you guys. You guys emailed us and said, hey, all you have to do is take the URL and just switch some stuff around and put the dates in. And magically, you can basically get anything you want from May 07 on. So what Joe is doing right now is compiling an archive page of all the BS reports dating back to when it was I, the sports guy, in May 07. And once we have that with you, once we have that finished, we're going to give you the URL. And you can compare the first pedophile pitch by Carolla in May 07 to the second one that he did last week. And actually, I listened to them both. And it's funny, he did have some different wrinkles in the first one, including the fat kid with the asthma inhaler who, you know, is going to die as soon as you see him. I thought that was funny. But Joe, when are you going to finish that?
Bill, I can't make promises I can't keep, you know?
Okay. At some point. At some point in the next 9 months, you'll hopefully finish that.
That's right. In the meantime, all you listeners out there looking for the old podcast, just search, you know, Bill Simmons or BS Reporter. If you remember, the initial name was Eye of the Sports Guy.
Yeah.
You can find all the podcasts in search for now.
Yeah. In search on the ESPN.
On ESPN.com, the brand new search.
Okay.
Check it out.
Cool. And then finally, yesterday when we talked to Jacko, we were talking about whether college bathrooms are as disgusting as they were when we were in college. And I asked some people who are in college to email anecdotes or really answer that question. The overwhelming consensus was yes. And in fact, people said they're just as gross, if not grosser. And I've saved some of the stories. I might have to have, maybe the top 10 most disgusting stories people sent in. On the other hand, they're so disgusting, I don't know if we'd even want to tell the stories. So I got to figure that out. But holy mackerel. I mean, I thought it was bad when I was in college, but it sounds like it's worse now, especially because you guys are all using condoms. And I never, you know, when I was in college, condoms were there, but not, you know, not as prevalent because it was before the magic thing really hit and all that stuff. But nowadays, now the condoms are basically mandatory. That is, seems to have added a whole new wrinkle to the disgustingness in bathrooms. Anyway, I have one email before we go. Where is it? Oh, there it is. So TJ in Omaha, Nebraska writes in, two local radio guys in Omaha got themselves a sponsorship deal with the local Subway locations. As part of that deal, they had their own special sandwich. You could go in and order the Todd and Tyler sandwich, which, if I recall, is very close to an Italian BMT, but also had Frank's hot sauce. I don't know who Frank is, but that's a little frightening. I think you need to talk to Subway about getting your own sandwich. I think this would make for a good 5 minutes on the podcast. What is the perfect sandwich if you had complete access to make your own from the ingredients? And if you were going to be represented by a sandwich, what would it be? I'm going to think about that, TJ. I can tell you that Frank's hot sauce is probably not involved because, again, I don't know who Frank is. But I'm going to have an answer for you in the next podcast. And then we'll badger Subway and maybe they could release my sandwich in like the 59th Subway Market or something, like, I don't know, Providence, Rhode Island, or Buxton, Maine, something like that. Anyway, stay tuned for that. And I think that's it. Joe Mead, did I leave out anything?
Like, you got it all covered.
I do?
I think so.
All right. Until then, I think we're going away with the BS Report this week. Coming back next week with a couple more. Until then.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.